for the love of goats. We are talking about everything goat. Whether you're a goat owner, a breeder, or just a fan of these wonderful creatures, we've got you covered. And now, here's Deborah Neiman.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Today, we are going to be talking about a disease that is extremely interesting and extremely contagious. And if you don't know about it, you definitely need to listen in today so that you can learn as much as you can so that you can protect your goats, as well as if you have sheep or cattle, because this is a disease that can happen with any of the ruminants. So we are joined today by Dr. Michael Posato, an assistant clinical professor of food animal medicine and surgery at Mississippi State University. He's board certified with the American Board of Veterinary Practitioners, specializing in food animal practice. And he has joined us in the past for some other really great topics like parasites. And we'll put links to those in the show notes. Welcome back, Dr. Posato.
Thank you for having me again. I love being a frequent flyer. This is a lot of fun.
Good. So it's really kind of funny. When I got interested in goats, I learned about CAE pretty quickly. And then one day after, I think I probably had goats a couple years, I was talking to my mentor and she said, you know, everybody's just so concerned about CAE, but the thing that really scares me is yonies. And I was like, what's yonies? And so she tells me about this horrible disease that can live on your pasture for like 5 years and you can't have any more ruminants on your pasture for all those years because they could get it. And it's a disease that has no cure. There's no vaccine. There's no treatment. So that's the bad news. And she certainly had me convinced that I needed to be concerned about it after that brief conversation. So if somebody's not familiar with yonies, explain exactly what this disease is.
Yeah. So yonies is a very interesting disease. It's endemic in the United States, meaning that we do have it very commonly in a lot of different species. As Deborah has already mentioned, it happens in multiple different ruminant species, sheep, goats, and cattle. It's caused by a bacteria called Mycobacterium avium subspecies paratuberculosis. And I always tell my students the way to remember that is MAP. So this is the same genus as Mycobacterium bovis, which is the causative agent for tuberculosis in cattle. It's the same genus as Mycobacterium tuberculosis, which is the causative agent for tuberculosis in people. It is not, however, tuberculosis. So don't panic. I know it has paratuberculosis in the title. That does not mean that it is going to cause tuberculosis in animals. And the reason it's endemic in the United States is because we haven't found it important enough at this point to kind of eradicate or to come up with solution to get rid of it, because it's one, either not affecting production as much as other diseases that we've run into, or two, it's not causing issue for human health. That being said, it is a very costly disease if you have it on your farm. What's kind of special about it is that, as Deborah said, it's hardy. It's hardy in the environment. It's hardy in the animal. So this bacteria actually invades the animal when they're very, very young. There's a potential that it will be spread from mother to baby via transplacental pathways. So essentially the mom can give it to baby in utero, which that really is a shame, because that means that all offspring from a positive animal could potentially have to be culled as well or removed from the flock or herd as well. It is a pathogen that goes essentially to the distal part of the small intestine. So the ileum is the most common location, and it doesn't come out and play until the animal is way older than when they were infected. So that baby animal can be infected either in utero, like I mentioned, or another common route is fecal oral. So essentially nursing on a mother who has the infection and is shedding the bacteria in her manure. If her teats are dirty, they can get it from her. And that baby will be completely fine for anywhere from 1 to 8 years or more, and never show any clinical signs. And then when a stressful event happens, that's often kind of something that helps elicit this clinical sign of this disease, that is going to lead to the animal starting to develop some of the classic clinical signs. And so that stressful event could be anything from parturition, which we typically see in animals that are 2 years old, roughly, having their first offspring. It could be shipping. It could be moving an animal from one place to another. It could be intermingling with a new group of animals. It could be disease, other disease, kind of concurrent diseases that are happening. So we classically associate this from about 2 to 7 years of age being the biggest time frame for this to rear its ugly head. However, over 2 years old is what I tell people, and beyond. So it can happen when they're well into their geriatric years where it starts to develop.
So once an animal has this, they're not necessarily going to be showing symptoms. So this is always like my big example of like why you should not buy animals at the sale barn. And it even used to freak me out, like when my daughters showed goats and we would be like at fairs where there's animal manure everywhere.
Yep.
You know, and you're stepping in manure and then you're walking into your pen with your goats. And then what if your goat eats hay that fell on that manure that was on your shoe? And then some people will say, oh, you're just paranoid. Like, is it really that easy to transmit it to your animals?
Unfortunately, yes. And that's what I love about you, Deborah. You're always very cognizant of biosecurity. And I think that's something that is really great about this podcast is that we do a lot of topics discussing biosecurity. Because I think biosecurity is something that a lot of people don't consider as a strong thing that they need to be aware of. I have a lot of clients, for example, that they'll tell me, oh yeah, I purchased that goat the other day from someone I never met before. And I put him out in the pasture right away with my other animals. And I'm like, no, let's do some kind of screening, some kind of, a physical exam at a very least, letting me look and see what this animal's got going on. Because the reality is that these contagious diseases are indeed very contagious. And there is the likelihood that you could easily get this from a show if you have an animal that's there shedding this. You can get this from an animal that comes from a sale barn. You can get it from someone who has a flock or herd of animals that they don't do any kind of testing or screening for, and you just don't know any background. I will say the most common time that this is going to be contagious and heavily shed into the environment is when an animal is actually clinical, which we'll talk about clinical signs in just a second. But the other thing I want to say, which is kind of bad for goats, is that there are two different strains of this bacteria. So there's a strain S, which is for sheep, and strain C, which is for cattle. And fun fact, goats get both. So the unfortunate reality for goats is that they can easily pick up this disease from a cow or a sheep. It doesn't matter. And then they can continue to shed either strain into the environment, contaminating the environment and possibly infecting other individuals. So it is very contagious. And unfortunately, it is relatively common. And oftentimes the clinical signs indicate a tip of an iceberg phenomenon. So basically, when you have an animal that's clinical, that's showing you clinical signs, you are going to most likely have layers of animals underneath that are going to be subclinically infected, that will still be potentially shedding low numbers or have the risk of becoming clinical and shedding high levels of that bacteria into the environment.
Yeah. So a few weeks ago, we had someone here from Washington State Diagnostic Lab talking about the test for yonis. And we were talking about the fact that, you know, just getting a single negative test on one animal is really not that helpful. That's why it's a good idea to buy animals from a herd where the whole herd has tested negative. And like, I don't want to sound mean to new herds, but because if you're a new herd and you bought all your animals from other herds that test, mm-hmm. then you've got their history, you know? But if you just like started a new herd and you just picked up a goat here and a goat there from Craigslist and, you know, all these random places from mm-hmm. people who never tested, you've got quite a potpourri there of all kinds of bacteria and parasites and everything.
Absolutely.
And that's something I think a lot of people don't think about because with dogs and cats, there's nothing comparable with dogs and cats, is there?
No, you know, and I mean, the only thing would be like a very young dog or cat with like a parvovirus type of thing, but that's only a litter of animals. It's not because you brought in a ton of animals. Now, I would say the only comparable thing is shelter medicine. Some of the diseases they deal with a shelter of animals that are the same scenario of these animals came from a hodgepodge of different places with different exposures coming into the same space. But for ruminant species, you know, we have a lot of, as you mentioned, parasites and bacteria and viral diseases that commingling is the kind of impetus, the start for this to all happen. So there's really nothing that is kind of off the top of my head extremely comparable in small animal that we do regular biosecurity screening for, or that something like that that's really, really helpful has been created to try to look for. In the small animal world, we've kind of jumped onto preventatives, where we give vaccination to all animals in order to prevent them. And we do have that in sheep and goats as well. But unfortunately, as you mentioned earlier, yonis does not have a vaccine. So there's no real preventative, injectable, biological, anything that we can give them to prevent this except for management. And that includes buying animals from known sources, buying animals from sources that test their animals, and then also maintaining cleanliness in the environment and trying to maintain an environment that doesn't factor manure as a mainstay of their bedding, for example. So all of that is, you know, important, and it does deviate us a little bit away from the small animal kind of component of things.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Most people, you know, if they're new to goats, a lot of times they're the first livestock people buy. Their only experience is with dogs and cats, and there just isn't anything comparable.
Yeah.
They have no idea that you can buy goats that have no symptoms and yet are walking around with a fatal disease that not only is going to kill them eventually, but is going to not just infect your other animals, but infect your pasture. And your pasture will now be infected for like 5 years because that lives for so long in the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. You know, and that's the thing with yoni. So I want to touch real quick on clinical signs because I feel like I've been skirting around that. And I just want to make sure we cover what to look for. So I'm going to talk a little bit about cattle and a little bit about small ruminants. So the clinical signs for cattle, if we're going to start with cattle, they typically have a pipe stream diarrhea. That is kind of like classic yoni's disease. They're going to literally have water coming out of their rectum. They also lose weight and get very, 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 very thin. So they become skin and bones in the face of a great appetite. So they continue to eat and eat and eat, but they're just not able to put anything together. Now, in the small ruminant side of things, there are some similarities. And the biggest similarity is that chronic wasting disease. So they're eating and eating and eating, but they're getting thin, 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 thin. And what'll happen often is you'll have an older doe, right? We talked about this being an older animal disease. So you have an older doe, she's, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, and she starts losing weight. Well, there's lots of things. I mean, we've talked about cases of hepatitis, we've talked about cancers, we've talked about elderly goats having other diseases, dental disease, things like that, that are going to cause them to lose weight over time. So you may think, oh, it's just she's old, you know, she's getting older, she's losing weight. And what it could be is yoni. And as Deborah mentioned, you know, she could be shedding. She's now clinical, right? She's losing weight. She's getting thin. So she is actually clinical for the disease. So the volume of bacteria she's shedding in her manure is higher. So she's actually putting up more into your pasture space and into your environment. Only 20% of cases will actually develop diarrhea in small ruminants. So where 100% of cattle develop that pipe stream liquid diarrhea, only about 20% of sheep and goats will develop that actual diarrhea. So a lot of people, especially people that came from a cattle background or have any knowledge of yonis, the first thing they think about is diarrhea. And if they don't see diarrhea, they're like, well, I don't think my sheep or goat has yonis. But the reality of it is that most sheep and goats, 80% of them do not even show any diarrhea. It's just that thin, thin goat, that thin doe that is eating like a champion, just not gaining any weight, typically anywhere from 3 to 7 years old or more. Now, in terms of it going into the pasture, that's absolutely correct. This is a hardy, hardy bacteria. It survives in sunlight. It survives in cold. It survives in organic debris. Most barns are made up of organic debris. We have wood. We have dirt. Very rarely do you have a stainless steel wall and a concrete pad that you're housing your animals on, right? And unfortunately, the organic debris, organic matter, is extremely hard to disinfect. So we talked a little bit about cleanliness and how that could be very helpful. Well, you can't clean the pasture. It's just not going to work. You can't clean dirt. You can't clean grass. So you have to wait over time. And we know that this can survive in the environment for a minimum of a year. So you could be hurting yourself, you know, if this is going to be in your environment. And like with other small ruminant diseases, there are some people that say, hey, once the area is infected, that's an endemic herd. That herd has it. It's just part of its life. And you may not see a clinical animal once every 5 years, but you have it floating in your herd. So for me, that's a very scary concept to think about, that as Deborah mentioned, like you've got this animal walking around with a deadly disease that not only infects other animals, leads to its own death, but will impact your pasture as well. So this disease, I would say, is tricky because of the iceberg effect, of the fact that we have all this subclinical going on. It's so hardy. And then we kind of brought up diagnostic testing. So I love that a Washington Animal Diagnostic and Disease Laboratory, that they talked about how doing a one-off sample is not a good idea. I wholeheartedly agree. So there are a couple options for testing for yonis. The options often include one of two samples. So either a blood sample, which is what the Waddle lab will do. They'll run a blood sample for you and they do a test called an ELISA, or a fecal sample. And there's a couple fecal sample options out there, or test options. First, you can do a culture. Cultures take a very long time, like 8 to 12 weeks. And I know that many of you out there wouldn't have that much time, especially if you have an animal that's kind of chronically wasting, getting worse and worse, and you just want to know what's going on. The other option is a PCR. So a PCR, fortunately, has about a one-week turnaround time. Here's the caveat with diagnostic testing. If the animal is not showing any clinical signs, I never trust a negative, because that negative is probably a false negative, potentially, because that animal could be shedding very low numbers of bacteria at that time. So what we really like to do, what we encourage people to do, is make sure that you're testing animals that are clinical. Now you might say, well, then what's the point of biosecurity screening? Well, the point of biosecurity screening is that you kind of do it every year if you're going to be up to date on everything, especially if you're an open herd that brings in other animals from different places. Even if it's a buck that you're just bringing in for 40 days to get your does bred, you should still do your biosecurity screening every year, because that yoni's, the most valuable way to do that is to do it every year to catch the animals that you may not have noticed were losing condition, or may not have noticed that they were kind of lagging behind a little bit. Because otherwise, you know, like Waddle already said, doing that one-off testing of just, oh, I did it and I'm done and I did this animal and they're negative, I can sell it for that animal to be negative. No, not true. If that animal is positive, however, there's a pretty good chance that they're actually positive. So these tests have a better chance of telling you if they're positive, being correct. If they're negative, we question. I know it's a lot of information at one fell swoop, but hopefully that was a good kind of, whew.
Oh yeah, that was great. So if somebody is buying goats, it's a good idea to buy from a herd that's been doing testing so that they've got this history of negative results behind them. And for how many years would you say, like, for 5 years or 3 years or 10 years, or obviously the longer the better, but
exactly. I know, but like, I mean, let's be honest, how many people out there may have that? Don't get me wrong. There are some amazing goat producers out there who have these results for years and years and years and years and have really jumped on the positive biosecurity screen, which I think is something that, you know, podcasts like this and other educational opportunities are kind of opening up other people's eyes that maybe didn't know this existed. And hopefully kind of inspiring other people to pursue diagnostic testing like this in order to make everybody's lives safer, the goats safer, the pasture safer, the human safer. Yeah, I would recommend at a minimum. Now, if it's a new person who just got started and they have only 1 year of results, that's great that they took the initiative to do that. And I would say I trust, especially if you talk to them and you get to know that person and they say, yes, this is something that I'm going to be doing. I already did this on my goats. Something I'm going to continue, you know, doing every year. I would be comfortable, especially if you plan to do biosecurity screening, maybe going ahead and getting that animal. Ideally, I'd say at least 2 years. And I would say I would really want to see some of the results on their older animals. For example, if they say, oh, here's all my results on my 6-month-old, that's not enough time for yonis to take hold. In fact, I would recommend that you don't test the 6-month-old. I would wait until they're at least 18 months old to do your initial yonis test. Doing them young like that is probably a little bit of a waste of money, because they're not going to be shedding any high volume of that bacteria at that point. So buying a doe from a person who is testing, if it's a 2-year-old doe that came back negative, I would say, hey, you know, I look like you've got a lot of other does in this property. Do you mind if I see your herd record? You know, and if I look at this doe that's 8 years old and see what she looks like, because if she's negative, then likely that's where it's going to start, right? That's who's going to be at the tip of the iceberg. So I think there's ways, and I think it all ties back to communication. We have to be able to communicate with the people we're buying animals from. And if they don't want to communicate with you, you might want to consider going somewhere else. That seems a little shady to me, because they should want to brag about this stuff. This is stuff that makes their animals more marketable and allows them to really kind of showcase how high quality they are as a producer. So if they're being kind of dicey and they're like, oh, well, why do you want to see her results? I'm not selling you her. You might want to say, okay, that's a little bit of a red flag for me. What are you trying to hide? Maybe that's paranoia, but I feel like that's how I would feel.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Like, I mean, you know, when you have negative results, you want to tell the world. You see people on Facebook all the time saying, hey, we just got our whole herd tests back for CAECL and yonis. We're negative for everything for the 9th straight year.
Exactly.
Or whatever, you know.
It's that a point is of pride.
Yeah, exactly. So I think if somebody is starting a herd and they buy all of their animals from a herd or two that's had all negative results for a number of years. And I mean, I just really think it's a good idea anyway, when you're starting to like buy from established bloodlines and stuff. That's kind of what I did. It's funny. I started in 2002 and I pretty much built my herd on the culls of the best herds in the country.
Yeah. Which I mean are amazing animals.
Yeah. Cause I'm like, okay, so this is their cull that they're selling, you know, as a yearling, cause her udder's not good enough for their show string.
Exactly.
But she's going to be better than, you know, 95% of the other goats out there.
Exactly.
From herds that are not trying as hard or not as well established. And I think the same thing is true with the testing for disease too, that when people have been around for a while and they've been doing tests for years and years and you buy your goats from them, then that's a selling point for you. Even if like, this is just your first year. And so you just did your first round of tests, you can still say, but all of my foundation herd came from these herds that are all have a long history of negative tests.
I 100% agree. I think just establishing a herd that has that history is enough for you as a beginner to kind of show that you're not just going to the sale barn and buying a bunch of goats that, you know, came off of the back of someone's truck. And sale barns are great. They're great for certain things. They're not great to build a foundation herd. I've had so many clients that are like, I got this goat for $30. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Let's see how many veterinary medicine charges I'm going to have to put into this animal because it's sick. And that's the problem. These cheap goats, they look, you know, glossy on the outside. They're gilded, right? They look shiny on the outside, but inside they're kind of rotten. So I would definitely recommend not building a foundation herd from Craigslist or from a sale barn. Getting a string of goats from a well-managed herd that has documented proof that their animals have been healthy, that is, I think, super, super helpful just starting out the gates.
So we already kind of spilled the beans on how the story ends. There is no treatment. They die.
Yeah.
Is there really anything else to say about that? Like they get sick, they start losing weight. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. The unfortunate reality is we can only support them. So essentially it's going to be hospice care. What I will tell you is if you notice that you have a clinical animal, you test that animal and they come back positive, it's best to call them. It's best to get rid of them, euthanize them. I wouldn't send them to a sale barn or anything like that. I would either, you know, have your veterinarian euthanize them or perform humane euthanasia yourself. You know, it is an AVMA acceptable thing to use a firearm to euthanize an animal. I will say keeping them around, you only risk infecting other animals. So when it comes to treatment options, since there is none, it's probably best just to make the fastest move to get that animal off of your property. Try to disinfect the best you can. Remember, with any disinfection, clean with soap and water first before you use a disinfectant. Many people I talk to, they're like, I just want to bleach it all. Bleach is inactivated by organic debris. So try to clean with soap and water, scrub the best you can, then go in with your bleach disinfectant or, you know, at whatever disinfectant you're going to use. The animals that are clinical, it's kind of the end of their line for them. So yes, I would say, you know, there's not much more we can say. One thing I will warn you all about, and I found this very interesting. I've had two cases in my career so far that they were losing weight. They were older does, and then they very acutely got very, very sick. Their abdomen started to distend and they died. And on necropsy or autopsy, they found that their small intestine had perforated. And they were able to find yonis kind of in that perforation when they cultured it. So it's a rare possibility for goats with this condition. But if you have an acute death on an animal that you're like, well, she was looking thin. And then all of a sudden it came out and not bloat. She's not bloated. Okay. So I'm not trying to say her left side of her abdomen is huge with gas. Her belly is full of fluid. That's from the rupture of the intestine. I would definitely recommend trying to get that to a pathologist or veterinarian to do a necropsy on them just to kind of check out what's going on and submit some samples. So I thought that was a very strange presentation. And of course, they had some of the classic signs like that losing weight, but it was so acute, the death, whereas an animal with yonis will take lots of time if you keep them around to go because they're going to just dehydrate until they get so weak they can't stand any further. And then that's when they often either expire themselves or have to be euthanized. So yeah, unfortunately, no silver bullet treatment, except for maybe a silver bullet.
Yeah.
As horrible as that sounds, but.
Yeah. So a year or two ago, I was talking to somebody who had some goats test positive for yonis. So they culled those goats immediately, but she didn't want to cull the whole herd. So she thought that, like, well, they would just keep testing and then culling positive animals, which to me kind of sounds like you got a hole in your boat and you're trying to bail the water out.
Yep. Yeah.
This boat's going to sink eventually.
Sure. Yeah. I think the challenge there is that obviously if it's somebody who has, you know, this herd of beloved goats, they don't want to cull the entire herd. And I understand that. It's always an option to depopulate and restart fresh. We do typically recommend if the person does not want to go ahead and depopulate and they want to continue to do annual testing. The other thing we recommend, though, even before that, is to cull all offspring. So if this was a 8-year-old doe who had 4 kittings while she was with you and you have 5 of her daughters, it's probably best just to go ahead and cull her daughters because likely they got it either in utero from her or they nursed on her and got colostrum from her. And as they did, there was contamination potentially in the environment. Obviously, she would have shedded her yonis more when she was stressed. So there's a chance that she has put it into the environment before we even knew that she was going to become clinical. So, you know, we typically recommend if you're going to be heavy on your culling, go ahead and cull. And it's really sad, but that ends up being like a bloodline, you know, because it's the mother and the daughter or the grandmother and the mother and the daughters. That would kind of be the first place to start. And then moving those animals off of that environment where the positive animal was and testing annually, but culling. But you're right. It is a little bit like trying to bail out a boat with a hole in it. And I think you just have to accept that as your future for this herd. And if you don't want to accept that as your future, then it's completely acceptable to say, I'm going to go ahead and depopulate and restart because I know that this is a disease I don't want to deal with and I don't want to have my facility to be, you know, but that I often find that people don't have the time to do that because you have to let your property sit for a minimum of a year if you can't disinfect it, you know. So this goes back to our initial first thing out the gates, how challenging this disease is to manage, to handle, to deal with. Because it's not something that's just like, oh, I had it and I don't have it anymore. No, likely you're going to fight this for years if you have it in your herd. And I think it all kind of ties back to proper communication with where your goats are coming from, making sure that they come from areas and people that have tested before and have some results for you.
Yeah. So you said a minimum of a year to even think about putting ruminants back on the pasture. So like years ago, I had heard that it could live on pasture for up to 5 years. Have they since realized it doesn't really last that long? Or what's the latest thinking on how long it can survive on pasture? If you want to be really careful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. You know, I think it's hard to kind of give a solid answer on that because I think it really does depend on a lot of things. The bacterium we know is so extremely hardy. It's really resistant to things like frost and freeze and desiccation by sunlight. And so it's not like, oh, I live in Montana or Minnesota and I get a lot of snow, so I'm probably never going to deal with the yonis. No, it can survive through that. So I tend to tell my clients that I would expect that bacteria is so hardy, it can live for a minimum of a year, but I wouldn't be surprised in the right conditions that it could survive longer. So that really nice soft spot in the dirt underneath the wall that has a little hole in it that the, you know, goat poop fell into and now it's just sitting there and it's perfect temperature. That could stay there for years and it would be impossible to know that it was there until you decided to clean out your barn for the next set of animals that came in and you stirred it up and it got into other areas in the barn. So I wish I could say, you know, yes, if you definitely hold them off for 5 years, it'll be gone. I would say 5 years, it will probably be gone just by the things that happen in life over 5 years and what happens on a farm in over 5 years. But I typically say it can last for a minimum of about a year.
Okay. So this has been really interesting. And hopefully a lot of people have a better understanding now of just how devastating this disease can be and why they should be concerned when they're buying new animals. Is there anything else that people need to keep in mind about this?
I think the biggest takeaways, hopefully, that everyone has kind of gleaned from this is keep a close eye on your animals, know where your animals come from. If you notice that your animal is starting to lose weight, especially over time, and it's an older animal, and I know we've had several talks about different diseases that can cause these things, call your veterinarian. That's going to be the best time to test. Even if you did screening earlier in the year, and now it's been 6 to 8 months, and you feel like there's an animal that's been losing weight over time, but has great appetite, just do one just to test that animal. I would recommend typically doing both a PCR and an ELISA just to make sure. Because if it does come back positive, one of those comes back positive, then you're going to say, yes, I have to deal with this. So the biggest thing is just keep an eye on those animals. And if you're concerned, call your veterinarian, have them come out and have a look, collect a sample and get that testing done so that you can try to avoid this becoming a problem in your herd and be as proactive as possible. And then I hate to say it, but don't try to save these animals. They do not have long to live, and they're only going to infect your pasture, infect your other animals faster. So cull as soon as you figure out an animal is positive.
Great. Thank you so much. This has been really informative.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me. And I'm sorry to leave on such a sad note of cull the animal, but I really appreciate you guys having me. And as always, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you know, I'm always happy to answer any.
And that's it for today's show. If you haven't already done so, be sure to hit the subscribe button so that you don't miss any episodes. To see show notes, you can always visit fortheloveofgoats.com. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/lovegoatspodcast. See you again next time. Bye for now.